And it kind of helps me recognize that my way of thinking isn't the end-all be-all. And, like, maybe I'm just really anxious right now. Maybe I'm on the verge of a panic attack. I don't know.
Right, right.
Anyway. So. Is it on, like, Spotify?
It will be, yeah. So this is all going to be Spotify, Apple Music. I use this program called Anchor.
Okay.
Which is this little startup in New York. And they, is this one not rolling? Little startup in New York. And they do like podcasts, like independent podcasts. And so you just set up an account with them and then you just literally drop your MP3 feed and then they publish it everywhere.
That's cool.
So essentially takes care of all of that work of, I remember in the old days trying to like get an RSS feed uploaded that then gets on the thing. It just, it becomes a whole pain. But
yeah, I remember Zach and I probably mentioned to you once or twice, we tried getting a podcast up early on in college, and then I feel like I got scared away because of like all those like middle steps of like RSS feed, and then I was like, okay, we could do something else. So that's why I'm like really happy to be here, because like I just have to walk in the door.
But... exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm really hoping that pretty soon I can get somebody else kind of running a lot more of the behind the scenes stuff on this, so I can also just sit down and just chat with cool and interesting people.
Hey. Oh, I'm happy to be here. Happy to be one of them.
I'm so glad you are here, JD.
Allegedly.
This is... like, well, hey, we'll find out at the end of the hour if you if you are a cool and interesting person.
So, what's up? How's all this stuff go? Like, do you have, like, a format? Or
dude, I've been keeping it loose. You know, I'm trying to figure out what this podcast is about. That's one of the things. Mm-hmm. And I thought at the beginning of like coming up with, okay, these are going to be the tenets of what it'll be, and then sort of planning out from there. And I think that that's a little bit too rigid. Mm-hmm. And my thought instead was, let's just record a bunch of episodes. Let's record a bunch of conversations. Let's see what happens. Because I'll be in all of them. Mm-hmm. And so if there's any constant, it'll be me. And I have a feeling that as I listen to them and edit them and put together these episodes, that there will be a through line found in that, that there almost has to be, because, you know, what are the things that I'm gravitating toward talking about? Mm-hmm. And so then using that as the format for what it is moving forward.
Hmm. That is interesting. Like, I kind of remember you vaguely talking about it. But I actually really like how loose it all is. And like, I'm just excited to see maybe after a few dozen episodes, like, what that common thread is, too. Because, like, you're half of those conversations. So, I don't know. I'm really curious as well. And if you're still doing this in, like, a year or 2 years, I'd love to see, like, what happens with it.
I really hope I am doing this in a year or 2 years. I love conversation. Mm-hmm. I think it's the most entertaining thing.
Yeah, you just, I get the vibe from you that you just like talking to people. And I feel like that's why we work, because I feel like I'm the same way.
Yeah.
And it's weird because I feel like I learned over the last couple years that I have social anxiety. And I feel like I'm an introvert, but a lot of my friends say I'm like the most extroverted introvert. Extroverted introvert. And you know, it's weird. It all comes down to like where you get your energy from. But I feel like I like listening to people's stories, and if you kind of go into like most conversations and just assume that there's something you know that I don't, then like you go in and you're like genuinely interested if you have that mindset. That's my whole point, which I'm trying to learn how to do more. So I guess that's why I'm going into therapy, and hopefully we'll be a therapist in a couple years from now, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you strike me as a very extroverted person. Just weird, like, right? In terms of the way that I interact with you and when I see you around campus and all of that, how would you describe it in yourself, what that difference is between extroversion and introversion, and where you fall on that line?
It's funny, because I was just talking to my roommate about this yesterday, and how I think we usually view being an introvert versus an extrovert comes down to, like, how many friends you have and just how comfortable you are being in a social environment. But we were both kind of talking and agreeing about how it really comes down to where you get your energy from. So, like, if you're an introvert, you can be someone that goes out and has a bunch of friends, but what's really driving you forward is knowing you'll be able to go back to your room and, like, have that downtime. And then vice versa for being an extrovert, where, like, you can be alone, you can be with a handful of people, but what's really driving you forward is, like, being able to talk to all different types of people and getting energy from that. And I think that's how I understand introversion and extroversion, and I think I agree with that, but I still don't really know where I fall. Like, right. I think I'm an introvert because okay. I think that's where I naturally lean in those two dimensions. I naturally lean towards just, like, having my downtime, playing guitar or something, playing the Switch, or just journaling, or, you know, whatever it is. But I think I'm pretty good at fooling people, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you find that you do, do you prefer sort of larger group scenarios when you are hanging out with people, or more one-on-one, or it doesn't matter for you?
Definitely one-on-one.
Yeah.
I think I've always been like that, but I just feel like when I'm in a group setting, I'm, like, more, I think my social anxiety is more active.
Yeah.
Like, we might have talked about this earlier at some point, but, you know, I'm thinking about, like, what everyone else might be thinking about in that group, and if I'm, like, if it's my turn to talk, let's say, I'm trying to, like, make sure I'm, like, making eye contact with everybody.
Mm.
And I'm, like, so, like, cognizant of, like, all these things that I think I give myself less room to just enjoy the conversation and just let it go freely. At least that's from, like, how I see things. But when it's one-on-one, I could just be like, all right, like, what's going on with you? What makes you tick? Like, how can we make this go as smoothly as possible, you know?
And yeah.
There's less, I feel less judgment whenever it's one-on-one, even though I think a lot of the judgment that I feel is probably just, like, in my head, you know?
Right, for sure.
It's easier for one-on-ones. What about you?
Yeah, no, I'm in a very similar boat. I find that when I'm in a group setting, there's a lot of performance that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly when I'm in a group, it seems like the goal is to make everybody else laugh.
Yeah.
That, like, everyone is essentially trying to crack jokes constantly. And mm-hmm. the night is judged in some ways based on, like, the number of jokes per minute that landed over mm-hmm. that night. I don't know if that's entirely true, but that is how it feels when I sort of analyze. And so I find myself really nervous about what I can say in those situations. That when I'm mm-hmm. talking one-on-one with someone, it's very easy to ask them questions. It's very easy to kind of start to go deep in terms of what it is that we're talking about. But in a group scenario, everything sort of has to stay on the surface. It has to be kind of entertaining for the whole group.
Mm-hmm.
And, like you said, you're sort of playing to a room. You're sort of paying attention to what does everybody want in this room out of this conversation that's occurring. And so it ends up just, for me, just taking a lot more energy for me to be in a room with a group of people versus sitting down one-on-one and having breakfast with my friend JD.
Yeah, and I think I feel the same way. I think the amount of jokes that land, I think, is how I operate as well. I don't know if that's, like, a universal thing, but I think it's, like, a very clear indicator of, like, okay, like, everyone's having a good time, like,
right.
Everyone's laughing, right?
And sometimes the jokes aren't really jokes. Really, they're just funny things that are said, or maybe it's a way that something's said.
True.
And so if the energy of the room can get to a point where you can say something completely innocuous and it cracks everybody up,
mm-hmm.
and, like, that's an really good sign that the room is doing well.
Right.
And it, like, everyone's in the same, like, energy and headspace.
Yeah, it's, I would totally agree. I think it all falls down to context, really, of like the way that a joke is said. But I think also what makes conversations difficult for me in a group setting is just how quickly it goes.
Mm.
Like, I think I use the analogy of like Mario Kart a lot, of like the CCs, like how fast you're going, and it feels like it's like at 200 CC where it's like you have to brake, like, but you know the brakes aren't actually happening, and it's like you can't really dive into those like deeper topics, I think, when you're in a group setting, or it has to be like a very like specific situation where, you know, it's easier to have those conversations. But most of the time, like, I feel like it's easier to just match people's energies when it's one-on-one. Like, there are some people who, like, you know, they're, like, high up here, and I guess I would fall in, like, the middle, but, like, I kind of match their energy, and, like, you know, well, I'm just more energetic or bubbly, I find, and there's other people who are, like, really good listeners, really quiet, maybe they are just soft-spoken,
mm-hmm.
and I kind of match that, too. Right?
Yeah.
We're like just, we're very good at mirroring people.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great point. And I think the people that are soft-spoken
mm-hmm.
tend to fade in groups in terms of just, and so I'm someone who, there's times when I feel like I don't have a lot to say. It's like, I just want to just sort of listen. And at the end of the night of just a night of mostly listening, whether it's self-imposed or otherwise, I feel my, like, social, it's not credibility, but it's how much I contributed in the situation, to me, feels a lot lower.
Hmm.
I don't think it is, and I think if I analyzed it and said, no, I was participating in a more passive sense, then I wasn't the one saying all of the things, but I was, you know, listening to what was being said. But at the same time, there's a certain, it's not necessarily as accepted in a group setting to be the quiet one, I think.
Yeah, I think I would agree. I think, I think, you know, usually if that happens after enough time has passed in conversation, like, it's brought up of, like, why are you being so quiet right now? Like, what's going on?
Right, right.
And maybe there's a difference between just being absolutely, like, stoic and quiet and, like, not really giving any indication that you're even listening versus, like, there's a difference between that and, like, active listening, where, like, active listening, reflective listening, where you're listening to what the other person's saying, and then afterwards, it may sound redundant, but you kind of clarify what they said, and you just kind of, like, explain it back to them in your own words, and like that's kind of one of the main facets of like clinical therapy.
Yeah,
because when that happens during that process, you know, the other person can kind of hear, okay, I didn't actually mean what I said here, let's kind of clarify. And then like during that whole time, they're actually feeling like they're being heard, but it's like a very active process because you actually have to listen, like, to everything what they're saying to the best of your ability. But there are also some times where, like, I'm in a group setting and I'm just, like, I'm just going to tune out. Like, this is not, like, a topic that is really great for me or, right. like, I'm really interested in. That does happen, I have to admit.
Or if it's moving so fast that there isn't space for that reflection.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know people that are really good at, like, one or two word active listening sort of indicators.
What do you mean?
Where they're really good. It's like a question, or it's a expressing that they're interested and that they're paying attention.
Mm.
So you finish a line and they go, oh my gosh, just like keep going. They want you to, like, continue the story.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
And that kind of engagement is so crucial if you're in that position. And I just simply am not, it's one, that's an area that I need to shore up in terms of my own ability to sort of have those, people make fun of me because I sound so fake when I'm like in a group setting and trying to like respond, because I, and it's not because I am fake, but simply I would rather sit down with one person and go deep as opposed to being in a more wider setting and going broad.
I think that's, there's something to be said about like practicing those skills.
Yeah.
Because like, I know what you mean where like, it does feel fake where, you know, you're like, I'll say more. And it just feels like maybe less so to the other person, but definitely to you. It feels like you're just like reciting a line.
Yeah.
And you don't even mean what you're saying. And I it's frustrating because it's like we're working against ourselves in that situation, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know. My dad is definitely someone I think about who's just naturally really good at just like, he can be at the center of attention in like a group setting, but he's also really good at like getting conversations flowing. Like I remember my parents came to visit me in my radio show like a year or two ago, and probably four or five of my friends were there. And so there was like 9 or 10 people in the booth, and he was just talking to some of my friends he had met, some people he had never met. Like, you know, they were my friends from high school who he's known for a long time. And he makes people feel very comfortable. And I've heard from some of my friends, like my one friend Sarah is like, ah, every time I see your dad, it's like, I want him to like me because I respect him so much.
Wow.
So, you know, part of me wants to try and mimic that, like as I kind of go on later in life. But I also know I shouldn't 100% do that because I'm just different, right?
Right.
Like I am just more introverted and I think more, I just take longer to like give out good responses. And I think naturally I can be soft spoken. I've been working over years to like challenge that in conversation. And I'm trying to figure out how I can like use that to my advantage. Cause my dad can be like a faster talker.
And I see.
Just different. So.
Yeah. Like I'm just curious, like what do you know sort of what some of the things are that he's doing that make people feel so included?
I can't really point out. Like, I'm trying to think. I think it really just kind of comes down to, like, that general principle. Like, he treats everyone like an old friend, more or less. Like, it's funny, because this thread has stayed within our family ever since my grandma, who I never met, sadly, but it was my dad's mom. And growing up, my dad would always be like, whenever my dad was out in public with his mom, it seemed like she knew every other person and they were stopping and talking. And my dad was like so annoyed, like, God, when are we going home? And, you know, sure enough, as my dad got older, he became that person. And then I became his son. And like that cycle continued where I would remember we would go to like, it's like we couldn't take him anywhere. Like, we would go to Office Max and he'd have a buddy there and we'd chat for 20 minutes, or like we'd go to Macy's or Best Buy, you know? Or like he'd bump into an old high school friend. And I remember he would say that whenever my mom or like, you know, me or my sister would like say, like, ah, you're doing it again, he would be like, ah, you know, I wasn't the one that started it. And it's so weird because I was very much that shy, like introverted kid. A lot of us were,
yeah.
I think. But, you know, that started changing in high school, then in college. And same things kind of started happening to me where, you know, I feel like it kind of started where I would just be comfortable saying hi to people one-on-one that I'd bump into on campus. And I would just kind of keep doing that, I guess. And it didn't really matter how well I knew them or how much I had interacted with them before. Like, if my general rule is, like, if I talked to you before, like, in a class or something, like, I'll say hi to you. I'll wave if you want.
Right, right.
And then I think that's how, like, a lot of my friendships have started. Because I feel very, very comfortable just doing that one-on-one. And then you just kind of meet all different types of people if you just kind of keep doing that. And then now we're here. Yes. I'm like kind of realizing I'm David Sharp II for a reason, maybe. It's funny. Are you kind of the same way, would you say?
You have a knack for having spontaneous conversations with people. I see it all of the time. You going up to someone and, or you just bump into each other and you talk for 5 minutes. I aspire toward what you have, JD. I know a lot of people and I smile and I wave and I say hi. I haven't progressed to the point where that extends beyond a couple of lines and a compliment.
Hmm.
And I would love to get to that stage of life. But genuinely, I mean, I think I was also a pretty shy kid. And I was, I was homeschooled from kindergarten through the end of high school. And so I think that in some ways shaped how I interacted socially in different ways. I mean, for one thing, it was a deep sense that adults were no different than I was.
Okay.
So from a very young age, I was always having conversations with people that were much older than me.
Hmm.
And so that has never been a barrier in my life. And I have friends that I know that that is frequently a struggle for them, where it's like, I don't know if I can talk to this person because they're 60.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, you guys just, you're both humans. Just sit down, have a chat, ask them what they have for breakfast. You know, like we're all living this life together. But I think in other ways, for whatever reason, I sometimes struggle to get that conversation kind of started, and actually have, frequently I just don't have anything to say, I think.
No. That's, yeah, it's weird because I get the, I don't have like anything to say.
Yeah.
I really do, because I feel like when it comes to most conversations, I am more comfortable being the listener.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, if people ask questions, I'm okay with sharing stories, but I think that's what makes it, I think that's why I've kind of leaned into, of like, there's actually one book I read, actually, we might have talked about this, it is like, 7 Habits of Highly Successful People, or, no, it wasn't that, it was like, How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yes, Dale Carnegie.
Yes, yeah.
Love this book. Right. Yes.
I never finished it, but I read like probably half of it, maybe more than half of it last year. And one of the ways that you can like win a friend and like influence people is just kind of asking people about their own lives. From my memory,
yeah.
Get
people to talk about something they want to talk about.
Yeah. So, and then, pairing with that, this might be another rule in that book, is just you need to find a way where you can like genuinely be interested in what they're saying.
Yes.
So I think it kind of comes down to not asking the right questions, but maybe asking what is it that the other person is saying that interests you the most, and then like kind of asking them to like say more. Yes. Helps you understand X, Y, and Z, and kind of to do it in a genuine way. And I don't know, I think I definitely had to like force myself to do that for over like a long period of time. Like in high school, I took drama class for like 3 years. And that was super fun. Yeah. I actually loved doing like improv, and every time we would do like a duet scene, it was like one quarter of the semester and we would end it off with charades, and I loved that.
Nice.
And I think that really helped me learn to just use my own voice in high school and like just project while you're speaking.
Or, yeah.
Like, I was still pretty good with eye contact. I think And thankful, I can say I got that from going to Montessori school, because I was also kind of like you. Like,
yeah.
You just had to be able to talk to your teachers.
Right.
But I feel like I got better with that through drama. And then drama workshop was the class. And
nice.
I still remember this moment senior year in high school when I was giving this speech, every senior at my high school had to give a speech in front of the student body and the teachers. And I was just getting into meditation at the time, and I wanted to share that with the school. And I was still pretty nervous, but I was ready to tell the story. And that's something my dad always said to me growing up, whenever I was giving a presentation, just tell the story.
Right.
And I told my story on like how I got into meditation, and a lot of people really seemed to like it. And afterwards, like quite a few of my friends and like acquaintances came up to the stage to just shake my hand or like pat me on the back. And like, I still think about that moment a lot, because it gives me something to be proud of from the work I did in high school. Because I remember being shy and having no friends in ninth grade. And then getting to this point where, like, I could give this kick-ass speech.
Right.
And thanks to a lot of people, like my drama teacher, or my parents, my friends, I think I learned to get more comfortable just telling my story. And, like, I'm still working on it now. Like,
right,
I think
this is,
like, a lifelong thing. But it's cool. It's a really good memory of mine that I think about sometimes.
That's awesome. So you got into meditation in high school?
Mm-hmm. I got into it my junior year. I can't really remember how, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I remember I started with the app Headspace.
Yeah.
Have you used that before?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, it was like just a really simple way to get into it.
Mm-hmm.
Something about it was like attractive to me, I think. I don't really know what it was, but I think it was maybe this idea of like tapping into your own like internal world and just kind of seeing like, okay, I'm feeling anxious right now. I'm feeling kind of happy, or, you know, any range of emotions. And then I kind of stuck with it.
Yeah.
So, but I know it's interesting because you have a background as well.
I do. I mean, I was essentially raised Buddhist up until age 10 or 11. And that meant once a year we would go to Buddhist retreats out in Massachusetts with the Vietnamese monk Thich Nhat Hanh.
Mm-hmm.
And those were really like cool weeks, but I was a kid and I didn't really understand what was happening. Like, genuinely, I sort of didn't really get it, definitely at a young age, but it was something that was just sort of constant in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents are both, my dad was raised Catholic, my mother was raised Methodist.
Okay.
And so at a certain point in my life, I think it was, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old. No, younger than that. It was like 9. They started this like Buddhist Christian Mother Earth Church, which was sort of this like combination of Buddhism, Christianity, and then Mother Earth spirituality. And I have lots of thoughts about all of that. And love most of what they did. And the piece that really stands out to me is that, like, the meditation and the Buddhism tends to not be in conflict with a lot of other stuff. It's not as much, I don't see it as religion as much as I see it as a way to conduct yourself in life.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, like, I mean, like, what you're talking about, like, being present and being aware and understanding your emotions and feeling the things that you're feeling, that doesn't necessarily replace, at least for me, like other religious experiences, but it can merely just, it's just another tool that we have to work with.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to describe it, like as a tool.
Yeah.
And it's very much a secular tool.
Yes. You know? Yes.
Like, I think a lot of religions have historically had meditation as like a practice that mm-hmm. was spiritual and like kind of went hand in hand with, I think, some of the teachings that were involved with like religions. Like, I'm not really sure. I know it's like a big part of like, you know, Buddhism, Hinduism, and like some of the Eastern traditional religions.
I mean, even a lot of Christianity, prayer
true.
Is in some ways a form of mantra meditation.
True. Yeah. So it's definitely ubiquitous here. Right. Mm. So I don't know. It's kind of interesting when you kind of talk about meditation and people usually, the first thought, and I had this first thought too, was like, you are this Buddhist monk and you're on top of a mountain.
Right.
You're like reaching enlightenment, right? It's just funny. And there's just so many more types of meditation than just that as well.
Yeah.
Just like breath meditation is typically the first and most commonly found meditation that people are introduced to. But there's like mantra meditation, like you said, and I'm exploring, like, have you ever done metta meditation?
Metta meditation? No, I haven't. Well, what is this?
This is, it's really cool. Like, it's basically translates to loving kindness meditation.
Okay.
And I think it translates from, it's like a Sanskrit word, I want to say.
Okay.
That's usually where a lot of these words come from. But it's a mantra meditation where you basically imagine five different people in your life. And you go from someone that you respect or admire, someone who's like a teacher in your life who's had a big influence, and you say, may this person be happy, may they be well, may they be free of suffering, any like combination of phrases that you choose to have. You're just basically giving out good vibes to that person.
Heck yeah.
So you repeat that a couple times, and it's usually helpful to visualize the person. So for me, I usually visualize my aunt because, shout out Auntie Susu. She's just one of those people who believes in you for some reason so much. And I feel like I always talk to her during like Thanksgiving or Christmas, and it's cool to have someone in my life who's like just excited for like anything it is I'm doing. So, it's very easy to like bring a smile to my own face whenever I start thinking about her. And then I usually go from there to a good friend. So, you know, it's still very easy to, spread good vibes to your friend, and you say the same set of phrases. And then from their friend, you go to a neutral person, just someone you don't really have any connection to, but you know, in passing, like maybe it's a barista at like River Road, or it's like, I don't know, someone who you passed in traffic and for some reason they stood out to you. So you wish those good vibes to them. You say your mantra piece. And then from there you go to the harder part of the meditation by wishing those same thoughts to yourself.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, it might be helpful to say like, may I be happy, may I be well, or sometimes it's helpful to refer to yourself in the third person. So saying like, may Meshach be happy, may he be well,
right,
may he be free of suffering, and trying to visualize yourself while you're doing that, because it's tough. Because the big thing with that meditation is you aren't supposed to force these feelings of like positivity.
Yeah.
In like a toxic way.
Right, right.
So there's actually another level to it where you are supposed to say these phrases to someone you actually don't like at the moment.
Mm.
And if you aren't able to do that with the person you dislike, let alone yourself, then for the time being, like, that's where the meditation needs to end. Because
okay.
I think it's all about cultivating those positive feelings and like being genuine about how you feel in that particular moment.
Yeah.
So I love it.
Whoa, that's so cool. That's, when did you get into this? I mean, this sounds amazing.
I think I learned about it probably senior year in high school or freshman year of college.
Wow.
And it's like, don't get me wrong, this isn't something I do every day.
Right.
Like, my meditation as of recently like has been more or less non-existent.
Yeah.
And I want to change that, but I feel like I kind of get back into it when I really feel like I need some kind of anchor. But I've been doing meta meditation on and off this semester.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's been helpful for me, because if you really dive into the words that you're saying, like the mantra of may I be happy,
yeah,
like the may part is helpful for me whenever I'm feeling like my world's like following and crumbling into pieces, and I feel like no matter what it is I do, there's like this deterministic lens on it that like, you know, things are just screwed.
Right.
And saying those set of words in the may part in particular kind of emphasizes that that may not actually be true. And it kind of helps me recognize that my way of thinking isn't the end all be all. And like, maybe I'm just really anxious right now. Maybe on the verge of a panic attack. I don't know.
Right.
And then like the other people, like my aunt or like your good friend or like a neutral person, like that's kind of a reminder of like, okay, there's other people in this world who have the same or very similar experiences as you do. And you need to remember that, you know, it's like, you got to remember you are not the center of the universe. You aren't the center of everyone's attention. And I think it's like a really great way to like begin to empathize with other people that you see by practicing that meditation. And then the last part I think is like, maybe I've been thinking about this because there's like this idea of like toxic positivity.
Yeah.
Right. Like when you are just unnecessarily like smiley and happy in the face of like something horrible that's going on. I don't know.
You're trying to like force it.
You're, kind of, yeah, you're trying to force like happiness when like maybe someone, like maybe their family member just died and, right, you know, they just need someone to like be sad with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think on some levels that that could be super toxic, but I think wishing peace and like positivity and happiness may sound super kumbaya, but I think it doesn't hurt to at least, it's kind of like prayer for me. It's kind of like, it doesn't hurt to put those vibes out there.
Yes.
But you still need to meet the person with where they are and like just be like, hey, if you need like a shoulder to cry on right now, if you need to talk about this, like you need to like be there with them.
Right.
But, you know, I don't think it hurts as well to be like, hey, I wish that you get through whatever it is you're going through and, you know, you find peace with all of this.
Yeah. No, there's something so crucial about feeling an emotion and not just trying to make it go away when it's one you don't want. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my gosh, I was experiencing this today. Mm-hmm. I got a text. I was talking to this girl that I've been seeing for a couple of weeks. And we're having a big thing tonight. And she texted me and she was like, hey, I don't think I'm going to be able to spend the night. I have a lot going on tomorrow. And I was like genuinely a little bummed out that she wasn't going to be able to spend the night. And I let her know. And I was like, you know, like obviously you got to do what's best for you. But like, yeah, I'm a little sad about that. And, you know, I was at the gym and then I was sort of like walking back and I ended up taking a shower. And instead of trying to like take that emotion and just like brush it off and go, okay, well, you know, it's going to be fine, whatever. It was like, no. Like take a moment and sit in being bummed out. Mm-hmm. Like I'm going to stand here in the shower and the water's warm and I'm got, you know, shampoo in my hair. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to experience what it's like to be bummed out. And it's like, oh, there's a little bit of like tension behind my eyes.
Mm.
And I can feel like my stomach hurts a little bit here. Mm. And I'm a little sore. And oh, there's like there's that pulse right there. I can feel it.
Mm.
And I stood there for 5 minutes and it happened. It, like I felt bummed out and then I could let that go.
Mm.
And I think that there's something about that really good to feel the emotion and then really good to just sort of let it flow away. And so I feel like what you're saying in terms of the good vibes is absolutely that. It's like when that tide recedes, that may the tide that comes back be one of positivity and one of light and one of goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. I would totally agree. I think it's, you know, it doesn't hurt to, I like that example, like the tides right there. I think whenever it recedes, whenever you like, you know, metabolize those feelings, which I think are important and I definitely struggle with a lot too, you know, just kind of remembering that things will change and maybe the tides will turn and right, it'll be a more positive one. But I think that's, I've talked to you about this a couple times. I think it's just like really cool that like you can do that to be like, okay, like I'm bummed out right now. Like I'm going to feel this, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like that's sometimes I like, I love music like most other people. And sometimes if I'm like going through something, I'm just like always have my earbuds in if I'm not talking to someone, and I'm always consuming some kind of media, whether it's like YouTube, whether I'm on my Switch or just playing games. And like when that happens, it usually feels like I'm not dealing with something. And then if I can, or whenever I can break away from that, I try and go on a walk without my phone or earbuds or anything, and just kind of like not force what I think about, but just whatever comes up to my mind, you know, yeah, we'll deal with that. I try to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You and I a couple months ago were talking about going to bed, like going to bed with your phone, mm-hmm, and how many people we know go to bed with their phone in their hand.
Yeah.
And since we had that conversation, I've been now like super cognizant, mm-hmm, before bed. It's like, what am I going to do here? So I like try to plug my phone in on the other side of the room. And I've even found recently, because I usually read before bed, like there are a lot of nights where it's like, I don't want to read right now. I want to lay here and just like take a moment, similar to like what you were saying in the walk, mm-hmm, just like take a moment and just sort of like think through some stuff, mm-hmm, and just like let myself kind of percolate on the stuff that happened during the day, mm-hmm, and just take a moment in the quiet and in the dark, and there's nowhere to be, nothing to do. You just lay here until you kind of fall asleep. That's been super useful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. Do you kind of get a sense of clarity about just thinking about what happened during the day? And like, are you kind of like, you know, I forgot I had this project that I have to do tomorrow, or like, you know, just feeling bummed out about your friend who like may not be coming to the event later. Like, you know, are you able to like be happy? Happy's not the right word, but like be at peace, I guess, with like how you felt, or like how you like reacted to certain things,
yeah,
and responded to certain situations throughout that day.
And that's what a lot of it is. Yeah, it's, yeah, exactly like sort of a reflection on genuine, usually it's a reflection on the day that just occurred and not the day coming,
okay,
forward. At least in the past couple of weeks, that's what it's been. And sort of, I tend to overanalyze everything in my life, always. Mm-hmm. And so giving myself a little bit of space to analyze maybe more healthily, not sort of just like the, kind of like motor that's always running in your head that's like replaying events, but saying, okay, let's like genuinely look at some stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my gosh, that went really well. And that was a cool moment. And that happened. And, you know, that interaction was a little awkward. Like,
yeah,
you know, why was that awkward? I don't really know. But, you know,
I'm just kind of keep going.
Maybe there's something to learn there. Maybe there's not something to learn there. Mm. But definitely giving me a sense of peace. And then it's like, okay, that was a good day. And then kind of a drift off to sleep.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I really like that you do that. I think I'm definitely going to have to take a page from your book on that. Like, hopefully in the last couple weeks. But I think I'm also letting the last few weeks, like, slide. Because I'm like, I'm only going to be senior in college once.
This is true. This is so, very true.
Like, staying up a little later than,
yep,
than I usually do. Going out with friends a little bit more often. But I'm, like, trying to keep these things in mind for, like, you know, once we graduate. Because I want to be someone that has, hopefully, more good habits than bad. And it kind of reminds me of this thing I did last year where it was, like, a gratitude journal I had for a few months where I would write down what was something that made me smile during that day, what was something that I was grateful for, and what was something that I did well that day.
Oh my gosh.
And it was like an interesting experiment, I guess, because I found the first two, it was so easy to just think of like some way where I was grateful for a friend or some joke that somebody said to me that made me laugh. But I always found it took a little bit more time to think of something that I did well. And I would say it started to get a little bit better the longer I did it. But if nothing else, it's kind of nice to look back at that journal, because there's like a 5 or 6 month period where I have something from every day. And that's something I think I really want to explore again. So it kind of reminds me of like what you're doing, of like this idea of like, let me reflect on like what happened today. You're thinking about the good things and the bad things, but you're just kind of writing it down, just keeping going.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. And I think too, yeah, having that opportunity to just sort of reflect on what actually happened gives you a lot of clarity. Mm-hmm. Because the things that didn't go well can really overshadow the things that went well. I just read this great book called Feeling Good. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure who the author was, but there's just a page in it toward the beginning that's just like different thinking patterns.
Mm. Okay.
And like traps that you can get yourself into, where it's like all or nothing thinking, or you sort of overgeneralize something that happened and project that's going to occur into the future. It's like a page and a half of this. And a lot of errors that we just make when we think about things. Mm-hmm. And a couple nights ago, I was just like having one of these moments where it's not hopeless, but it definitely felt a little bit more, I was just sort of like just upset about something. Mm-hmm. And opening that up and just sort of looking through, how am I thinking about this? And it's like, oh, well, this hasn't happened all of the time. Mm-hmm. This thing that I'm upset about that I feel like is happening all the time, it's happening twice in the last week. It hasn't happened every night. And that sort of reflection was able to give me a lot of perspective. And I went, oh, well, actually, this is a much better situation when analyzed than I thought it was. And so...
Oh, so like, it's giving you perspective.
Exactly.
That's cool.
And almost the equivalent of sitting down with someone and having them just go, well, hold on. Like, you know, it sounds like you're you know, kind of running yourself in circles here. Like, maybe give yourself a second and really, really think about this.
Yeah, I think it's kind of hard to figure out if I might be right, I'm not sure, but like that black and white thinking, overgeneralizations, those are like cognitive distortions.
Exactly.
Yeah, and those are just errors in our ways of thinking that isn't always helpful. And it can be hard to spot that in yourself. Like, I know I am usually susceptible to like black and white thinking. Mm-hmm. And despite that, I still have a really hard time figuring out when I'm doing that.
Yeah.
And even when I know I'm doing that, how I should shift my way of thinking so it's healthier. And I think like the closest thing we can kind of get to is like journaling. But it's like really, really helpful just kind of talking to a therapist, which it's already hard to like get into that process,
right,
of finding someone who you connect with. But it's really helpful to have that because they can point that out. And I think the more that happens, the more you develop that skill in yourself. So it's really interesting to just kind of like maybe write it down and just see like, okay, like this is happening again. And this thing that I'm upset about, like you said, only happened twice this week and not every night.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause we do get ourselves caught in these patterns, mm-hmm, and believing things that we know aren't true when we look at them actually.
Yeah.
Which is so bizarre. And you know, part of it has to be just because we're one brain. Right. And it's like the brain is both trying to like think about it, and then we're also having to think about the way that we're thinking about it. Like, it becomes sort of a complicated thing that we're attempting to do. And so it doesn't seem crazy to me that we make errors when we do that.
I think it's so weird being human like that, because the thinking about it, then the metacognition about that becomes a lot sometimes. And then like, when you're like me, when you're also just prone to overthinking, like, it's just like overload, and you want to be able to not think at all. And I think that's where, you know, certain outlets like using substances or like other coping mechanisms kind of come into play here.
Yeah, right.
To like help quiet that mind. And I've definitely like had my struggle with some of those things, but I guess I'm trying to find ways to deal with that in a healthier sense, and meditation is one of those big things.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. I also don't know that it's always completely unhealthy to use substances. Mm-hmm. Like, I think a lot, you know, if you're abusing it and if you're trying to use it in a way so that you're, whatever, removing emotion or, like, there definitely are instances where that becomes unhealthy. But I think there's a lot of times when it is totally fine to just, like, let loose and have a few beers and just, so, like, because I think sometimes you do have to jumpstart yourself out of whatever, you know, spot you're in. And if you can do that in a way that doesn't then involve a lot of, like, regret and bad decisions, then maybe that's sometimes the right thing to do.
Yeah, I thought it's actually a perfect example of, like, maybe some black and white thinking. I'm not sure, mm-hmm. but yeah, man, I think it kind of just depends on context,
right?
Like, are you using these substances? Are you engaging, like, these behaviors? Like, behaviors is a very, like, loose term, but what I mean by that's, like, maybe, like, you're going out gambling, maybe you're spending 12 hours a day on the internet, maybe right. you're watching pornography, right?
Right.
Like, are you doing all these things out of a reliance?
Sure.
Right? Or if it's, like, this sporadic thing you do once in a while that's very much infrequent, then maybe there isn't as much harm as I paint it out to be. Like, sure. having just a few beers every once in a while, mm-hmm. like, I don't think that's the end of the world, right?
Right.
I mean,
it's fun. It's a good time to have a couple of beers with some friends. Yeah.
It's a great way to make good friends, right?
That's absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's just, you've actually mentioned this before, and, like, I've been exploring doing this in my own life. You talked about how you are thinking of not really buying alcohol after graduation.
That's my thought.
Can you say more?
Yeah. I mean, so part of it, I have this dream of just going really frugal after I graduate. And I keep telling people, I'm like, I'm in vacation mode while I'm at school. And no one believes me. I'm like, no. Genuinely, I sleep in late. Mm-hmm. I'm eating junk food all the time. I don't work out nearly as much as I'd like to. And I spend a ton of money on, like, going out to eat and on alcohol.
Yep.
I would love, when I graduate, to just eat beans and rice and work out every day. Like, that would be ideal for me.
Yeah.
And I think there definitely will be alcohol around in my life simply because I'll be living with people that drink. But my thought is just to not spend money on it myself. Mm-hmm. And it genuinely is a cost thing more than a, and there, I mean, there's health aspects to it as well. Mm-hmm. But the primary driver for me is, like, I can have a really good time and spend $0 instead of spending $50.
True.
And so maybe I'll just learn how to have a really good time at $0 and then save those $50 for something else. So that's most of my motivation, I think, at this point.
Like, the frugal aspect of it.
Exactly.
Fair. Yeah, I don't know. I think there's something about that maybe the reason why I'm exploring that idea in my own life is coming from, like a detox / you know, reprieve from substances so I can, like, get a sense of clarity, like, once I graduate. Because, like, right now I'm having fun. I'm letting loose.
Yes.
End of senior year.
Let's go.
I want to make those memories. But I remember one of my professors, my astronomy professor, I had him my first semester, and ever since then, I've gone to see him at least once or twice every semester and just kind of chat about life.
Right. Nice.
And when I was talking about, like, when I was using substances more earlier on in college, and I was like, man, I'm really trying to, like, find a way to not rely on this stuff so much. And I'm, like, really thankful that, like, I had a professor who I could just talk to about this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of the cool things about college.
Yes.
And he said to me, like, you know, to get us a good sense of where you're going in life, you have to have a certain amount of sobriety.
Mm.
So I really liked how he phrased that, because he wasn't suggesting, like, straight up sobriety against everything, but just having, like, a balance to that and, you know, not letting these substances or these behaviors that kind of ease the mind to dictate your life.
That's the key, dude. Yeah. I mean, I think more than anything else, you want to make sure that it's not... Yeah, I mean, you want to make sure that it's not telling you what to do.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's... Right, that's the most important thing.
I think so too. Like, I think it makes it harder to listen to your gut, to your intuition, when those things are making the decisions in your life, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you feel worse, like, just physically. Like, I there's a certain amount, you know, and we're young and I think we can take a lot, but, you know, you have a night party and you wake up the next day and your brain's a little foggy and it's tough to get that paper written and kind of moving slowly and there's a mess and you're like, oh my gosh, I don't want to eat anything, but I'm starving. And
just
like
in your bed,
you want to just like lay down and you're completely dehydrated. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what cost am I willing to pay for that? I grew up, my parents stopped drinking late 90s. So before I was born, and so there's never alcohol in the house. And when I was a kid, they would throw these fucking ragers.
Yeah.
And it was crazy. And neither of them drank.
Yeah.
And they would blare 80s music. We'd roll up the carpet and there'd be a bunch of people dancing out in our living room.
Yeah.
And there would be like plates of food and candy and snacks and people running around in the backyard and hanging out and having conversations. And it was a great time.
Oh, dude, I love that.
And then you go to bed and you wake up the next morning. You're like, wow, what a great night I had. I don't feel like shit at all. And that was just super fun.
Yeah, dude, So my parents didn't throw those parties, which I wish I was there. I wish I knew you back then, because holy crap.
It was so good, yeah.
Like, I also grew up in a similar environment where, like, you know, both my parents don't really drink. I think as I've gotten older, especially as I got into college, my mom's gotten a little bit more loose with that. True. But I can still count, I think, on just two hands the number of times I've seen her with, like, a beer or wine in her
hand. Wow.
And I'm like, whoa, what's going on, dude? And then my dad, like, you know, I've never seen him drink before. And there's, like, reasons for that kind of go back to his own family. And I totally understand that. But, like, the point with this is just, like, I grew up until I was 18, you know, not drinking or doing anything like that, party or anything. And maybe I'm just nostalgic for those days. Like, I will admit that, but I kind of like not having to rely on that kind of stuff, like drinking to have fun.
Yes. And
like having this sense of clarity, which again, I think it really is rose colored glasses. Cause I look back at like 15-year-old JD and like, he was still trying to figure things out just as much as I am now. Yeah. And I don't think I had necessarily more clarity back then, but I'm like curious what my life would be like now that I'm a little bit older, to have a little bit more sobriety in my life.
Right.
So I think I'm like kind of flirting with that post-college, at least for a little while. I'm like really excited for this summer. Like I'm going and there's like this family friend that we have who she cycles with a group of people around the city of Cleveland and some of the suburbs nearby the lake. And she invited me to, you know, join their group. And I was like, you know what? I'm graduating this spring, so I definitely will send you a text, because that sounds like a bunch of fun and like a cool way to like maybe see my city in a way that I hadn't before. So I'm trying to dive into that. I'm trying to dive into some of my other hobbies, like playing guitar, singing, and hopefully we'll do some kind of open mic situation. Like, dude, nothing serious, but like this is what I mean, where it's like, this is when my life really begins, I think. So, it's sad to, like, say goodbye to, like, everything that we've known up to this point. And I will miss my friends a ton, a shit ton.
Right.
But I'm excited.
Dude, we gotta get you down to the place in Columbus. Did I tell you we're building, like, an outdoor theater in the back?
No,
what? So, like, we have this deck back there, and I found a spot. I can do, like, 25 chairs.
Yeah.
And then I just met this guy here who wants to go into theater tech.
Oh, cool.
And so he's really good with lights and he's really good with sound. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to have him come down and we're going to figure out a way to essentially take the backyard and have it wired up so we can put lights up, we can have a sound system in.
Oh my God.
And then have musicians or stand up or just do performances on that back deck with a mic, and then have people just like sit in the yard and just watch what whatever like micro thing is happening. That's so,
so cool.
We got to get you to come down and play some guitar. I would love that. That would be so cool.
Man, I would love to. I still just got to see the house in general.
Dude.
But that's like, there are some moments when people are like talking about stories that I'm just like connecting with, but like, I call them goosebump moments. And like, that's definitely one where like, I just think it's so cool that you're doing that, man. Like, I'd love, because like, everyone who's coming to help you this summer are like, you know, your friends, like,
yeah,
kids from Denison. And like, I just love that, like, I get to see the beginning of this, and like, who knows what it's going to be like in 5 years from now. So anyway, I can help out, but anyway, I can be a part of it, but I just would love to see this thing grow.
Dude, I want to get you there. I think you would have a really good time. It's going to be, I'm really hoping to create a community that people everywhere feel invited to. Mm-hmm. That, like, that's my ultimate goal, is no matter what your background is, that you feel welcome at the house. And I think music's a great way to do it. And I think that food is a great way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to be doing a lot of that. It's just sort of just like outreach. Like, hey, you're in your 20s, you're young, you're trying to figure it out. Come on, let's all try to figure it out together. That's my goal. That's the image that I have.
Yeah. I'm curious, do you think like your motivation kind of came from like how you were raised, with like your parents creating their own church? And yeah. Like, I just think it's really cool that, you want to create this community. And we've talked about this idea of community. Like,
right.
That's kind of what I'm looking for in this group of, like, cyclists.
Yeah.
And it's, like, a way to stay fit, to meet a bunch of people, different ages, and it's cool. And I'm, like, curious of, like, where that comes from with you.
I think it does. I mean, my parents' main focus in life was building community. Mm-hmm. It's to this day. A lot of what they do, most of what they do, is build community. And so I always grew up with a really strong community, and I love that. And I think also there's a piece of me that doesn't feel like failure would be that bad. That, like, if it doesn't work out, it's like, okay, didn't work out to build the community. Cool. Like, let's move on. But what the flip side of that being, there's nothing to lose. So might as well go all in and see if I can make this thing happen that feels super cool in my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, one of the many reasons why I respect the hell out of you for that. There's nothing to lose. And I think also I want to talk to you about, community is something that Jordan Peterson thinks is super important.
Oh yeah.
And if you can help me remember with like the future authoring program, the seven
That's
domains,
right.
Like he was thinking of adding that as an additional thing for people to focus on like how they can develop a sense of community in their own lives, thinking in the next 3 to 5 years.
Yes, right, because it is like the thing that you need to have to be anchored in your life, is to have a sense of community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember he said, yeah, I think he said that adding like, yeah, adding the community aspect, which I think is really is crucial, and maybe one of the things that I think he's been missing for a while, because I love Jordan Peterson. He's a very individual focused person.
Yeah, true.
And I think weirdly enough, there's this like individual versus community dichotomy that is like encompassed the left and the right politically in America for a while, which is just odd to me. Because I think both can be super important and both are crucial. Like, we need to lift up the individual and we also need to lift up the community.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that's, I mean, it seems like people that have stronger communities, like, live longer, better lives.
I think so.
And I think that's been documented. There's this book called The Blue Zones.
Okay.
Have you heard about this?
No.
It's done by a National Geographic journalist, 2005-06. They were doing just, like, this short piece on people around the world that lived for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started to notice, like, pockets where they're like, oh my God, this community in Italy, people, there's a really high degree of people that live to 100 here. Mm-hmm. And then this community in Peru, there's a bunch of people that live to 100. And so the book is just a bunch of anecdotal evidence from these blue zones, mm-hmm. About these communities. That's like, holy cow, all of these people are really, really old and super healthy. And one of the things that is common among all of them in the book is they all have this support structure that extends beyond their immediate family. That it's like, oh, the people of the town come by, they're 90 years old, and they walk 3 miles up the mountain, and they come into the hut, and they bring a loaf of bread, and they all sit down, and they have bread and coffee, and they chat for 3 hours, and that's their afternoon. And I think, I know my life is better when I have that sense of belonging and friendship. And so I think it's a good thing to develop.
Yeah, I wonder if that's one of the main reasons why people feel like so nostalgic for college. You know?
Like, yeah, that's very possible.
It's so easy to do what we're doing now and to, yeah, you can have parties, but also if you just want to chill, take it easy and, you know, hang out with people who are all over the globe, you can still invite them over to your apartment and, you know, play Mario Kart or just, you know, do something very, very low key. And
there's people everywhere, too.
There's people everywhere.
Like, dude, I was unloading the equipment to shoot this thing today.
Yeah.
And I saw this group of girls and I was like, I like waved to them because I knew a couple of them. I go back to grab my second set of gear and they like flag me down from their car. And they're like, oh my gosh, I heard about a party at your place tonight. Can we come? And I was like, yes, please, all of you come. And like, so like, just in like 30 seconds, it was like, oh my God, like this interaction between people that, and that, it just feels so good.
Yeah. No, it's, I felt that yesterday with, I hope I pronounced this right, Ostevilia?
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Sick. Okay. I was really not sure, but like it was so fun. It was cool. Just like that's one of those moments where you get to really just hang out with like first years, seniors, people from frats, sororities, people you just normally don't talk to. But like that's one of those situations where I'm just bumping into everyone and I get like good energy.
Yeah.
And it's, I love that. I know that's like a unique part of college. So if I can be a part of any semblance of that kind of community after here, I guess that's what I'm looking for. And maybe not, it doesn't have to be to the same extent. But, yeah, just people who I feel like I belong to, people who I feel like have my back. Like, I think that's why we're, like, what's the word I'm thinking of? Like, that's why we started off being in a tribe early on in humanity.
Right.
That's kind of, you know what I'm talking about there? Like, I think that's, we have a very strong need for that, you know, that we don't always address. And I think it kind of traces back from like where we started with our species. Maybe.
Yes. And I think there's a particular hunger for it right now coming out of COVID. Because I think everyone spent, I think pre-COVID, we didn't necessarily realize the value of other people. Or at least I didn't. Because you kind of take it for granted. That it's like, okay, I'll go see my friends or I'll go do this. And then suddenly you're home. And you're stuck there and there's nothing you can do. And then you get out of it and you're like, wait a second. I remember summer 2020. So we got sent home in the spring. And then in June, we decided because like my family was being really like quarantined and safe. And my best friend's family was being really quarantined and safe. And so we decided that he and I were going to be like hang out and work out in a garage. And we were going to just like work on some film projects or whatever and just see each other. Mm-hmm. And like the first day that I got to just like see him in person for the first time in months, it was like the greatest like feeling of joy. It was like, oh my gosh, I get to go hang out with this other person.
Yeah.
And I don't know what we're going to talk about. I don't know what we're going to do. I don't know what this is going to entail, but we're going to like be together doing something. And I think on a global scale, that's where we're at right now, where it's like people want to be together doing something. Mm-hmm. And so I think there is a particular hunger at the moment for that kind of community.
I think I remember having similar feelings like that, like during that summer as well. Like maybe one of the first times I met up with, like, my high school friends. It was just so exciting to, like, see them in person again.
Yeah.
Especially when we got back on campus, like, we hadn't seen each other in, like, 6 months. And that's right. It was just cool to catch up with everybody. Yeah, you know, I don't think I realize how much being a part of that community was just keeping up my mental health, because I really struggled. Like, I know a lot of people did when we first got sent home. Like, I went on a lot of drives to just, like, help clear my mind. I got outside a lot safely. Like, just that was the time I really got into longboarding, and I would just, like, try and learn different freestyle tricks and just, like, skate around on, like, a parking lot near my home. And I still really miss people. Like, I was happy to, like, sort of be the introvert that I feel like I am, and really just dive into those hobbies, into those things that I like. But I miss people, you know? I think a lot of us are feeling that.
Yeah. Just that. Yeah. Like, a deep missing of people. Yeah. And that, I mean, that was the pitch that I gave for the house, was like, hey, guys, let's try to create all of the good parts of college, all of that community, without having the downsides of having to go to class. Because that sucks. Yeah. But we could just, what if we just, like, hung out and went to work and then, like, all lived together? And so I'm hoping that I'm able to emulate some of what is so great about being here. But we'll see if it happens, I suppose.
Yeah. I'm so excited to see it. How many people do you think are going to be able to fit into the house?
So I have 5 bedrooms on the first floor, or on the second floor, rather. And then there's a 2-bedroom apartment on top of that.
Okay.
And then a 1-bedroom apartment on top of that.
Okay.
So in that house, there's, whatever, 8 bedrooms in there. And then we have a house next door that has 3 bedrooms. Mm-hmm. So hypothetically, it could be up to 11 individual rooms. And then I think there would probably be some couples in there. So, I mean, ultimately, I would love for there to be, like, you know, 12, 13 people sort of involved in there. Right now, I think it's going to be 6 or 7 for the summer. But hopefully grow from there as we kind of finish renovations and have areas of the house available. So
it sounds like a cozy number of people.
I think it is. Yeah. I think it is. And I think that there's enough space for it as well. I mean, that's the nice thing. I think that people have to be able to do what we were saying earlier, where, you know, it's like, you can be in the space and then you have to be able to pull out. You have to be able to just, like, spend the time in your room and recharge. And so I'm really trying to strike that balance in terms of, like, making sure people don't feel overwhelmed and, like, they can't escape. Mm-hmm. So that's also, like, one of the things that I'm considering in all of this.
But, like, how to really emphasize that and not, like, feel people, not make sure people feel pressured to, like, always be a part of every event.
Yeah, or just, like, you know, when your extended family comes and stays with you for a week and you're like, I just need to get out. Like, it's like my space now feels encroached on. I don't want that to be the feeling that people have. I want it to be much more, well, like it is here where you're in an apartment. It's like, okay, like, good to see you, roommate. I'm going to go in my room now, close the door, play guitar, watch a movie, whatever. I want there both of those options to be available. So.
Yeah. I hope that. I hope that you're able to, like, basically mirror what it's like to have an apartment on campus now. Because I feel like it depends on who you're living with. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm lucky because my roommates / friends, it's very easy.
And, right.
Like, we always respect, like, you know, we're always looking to hang out with each other, like, watch a TV show, play cards or something. But, you know, if we just want to go into our rooms early one night, like, that's cool too.
Right.
It's not like, why aren't you hanging out with us?
Right,
you
know? Right.
And maybe that's, I think that is hopefully that's something that becomes easier to understand as you get older.
Like, I think so.
Because you're kind of hoping for people in their 20s, late 20s, to be in this house.
Exactly.
So I think that's what people want, but also, you know, wanting that individual space, but wanting a community at the same time.
Yes. So it'll be a balance to figure it out. Yeah, I mean, I'm a very early to bed, early to rise kind of guy. Mm. And I don't do that here. I mean, that's like another thing. Like, I'm in vacation mode where I like go to bed at 2 now and I wake up at 10. And it's,
yeah.
Like, that is not, in high school, I went to bed at 9:30 every night and I woke up at 5:30 every morning. And I probably will do that after I graduate. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, being able to go to bed early and not get shit for it. You know, like, that's ultimately the goal for me. And then we'll figure it out with everyone else.
Yeah, to have your own weird little schedule.
Yes.
Right? Like, I think I might have told you this, but, like, Zach and I, we watch a lot of, like, motivational YouTubers, self-help YouTubers freshman year.
Yeah.
And I'm still, like, occasionally visit their channels, but, like, I was really into it then, and, like, there's this whole idea of, like, having a morning routine. A lot of people suggest, like, to really get your morning started, start early. So yeah. There was a 2-month period, maybe 3 months, where we both got up at like 5 a.m. and we were just down in Curtis West working.
I remember this.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I would accidentally get up or still be up from the night before.
Yeah.
And I would come into the common room and I would see you and Zach and I was like, what are you guys? You look wide awake and chipper. Like, I don't understand this.
It was an interesting little experiment. And like, I would get, like, it was loving, but I would get shit from my friends all the time when they were like, I was like, it's 9:30, I'm going to bed. Goodbye, y'all. Then, like, I would, like, wait for Zach at the back door because he lived in Beta during that year.
Okay.
And then, like, I'd open up the door and we would just kind of be downstairs doing work. And sometimes we'd take breaks, play pool, listen to a podcast, just kind of, like, prep our day.
Right.
And I feel like I learned things, but ultimately the reason why I stopped doing it is because I was just in college. I was a freshman in college, and, like, right, things just happen at night.
Yeah, so right.
It just made less sense to really stick to that back then. But I think that might be something I explore again after, sure, graduation, because it is quiet early in the morning in a way that you can't really experience any other time of the day.
You can stay up at night, and it is not the same thing. No. Like, waking up, and you're like, oh, I got 2 hours before the sun hits.
Right.
Like, for me, that's, like, maximum productivity.
Yeah, and you can start your day off the right foot.
Right? Yeah, right.
Like, meditating, journaling, doing any of those things that kind of gets you in that right mindset so you're sharp and you're clear. Like, that's kind of my goal, so I can stay consistent, I think. So we'll see if we end up doing that, but I definitely am more, that's one of the things I'm weirdly excited about.
Yeah.
It's like, I want to be that guy who can do that again.
Yeah.
And hopefully this time it fits into my lifestyle and actually makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll see.
Dude, this has been amazing.
Dude, it was better than expected, I think. I was like, I think the first, like, half hour, I was, like, nervous. I'm like, I know no one's here, but, like, people are watching.
Right, right.
So I was like, just focus on me, Chef. It was really fun. We just shot the shit for, like, a couple hours there.
That's the goal of this podcast, and yeah, hopefully people want to listen. And if they don't, like, we had a great conversation.
Yeah.
I think it's an excellent way to spend a Saturday afternoon.
I hung out with my buddy, Misha.
Yeah, there. I hung out with my buddy, JD. Dude.
Cool.
All right.
Thanks for having me on here, man.
Thank you so much for being on. We'll have to do this again.
Yeah.
Maybe check in 6 months and see where we're at.
Yeah, I definitely plan on coming down to Denison. Like, I still have a bunch of friends here and
yeah,
a lot of things in Columbus. And, you know, once you become friends with me, I don't think it's going to be hard to get rid of me. So
I am glad to hear that.
You're more than welcome up in Cleveland, too.
Dude.
So
we'll make it happen.
Yeah.
We'll definitely make it happen.
All right.
All right. That's it.
Cool.
All right, guys. See you later.
Bye.